And we are now joined here by Tom Facito, who is a certified public accountant, I guess Wave Farms public accountant, right? Based in Cairo, you recently started your own business. I guess it's called Tom Facito.
Tom Facito, CPA PC, right on Main Street in Cairo.
And we brought you in because it's getting close to the end of the year, and people hopefully are starting their financial planning. I guess you hope.
I would hope by now that they have. Yeah.
And talk about anybody wants to call in with questions about year-end financial planning for small businesses or individuals or about taxes or charitable giving, anything you can think of, you can call in now, 518-622-2598, or you can email Tom at WGXC.org. We have a couple questions already, too, tell us the new firm just opened.
Yep, we opened last month on October 7th.
And you'd been working in, out of a different Hudson firm
Hudson
before
office,
that?
Yeah, I have 21 years experience.
So you've been in the area a long time.
Right, and I've been working out of the Cairo area for the last 10 years.
Are there any big changes in the tax law this year that people should be aware of?
Yeah, one of the biggest changes, actually, that many of the individuals are going to see, and of course have heard about now for the last year and a half, 2 years, is relates to the Affordable Care Act, and basically the health insurance and the premiums and so forth like that. For many of the individuals that actually have had health insurance for the entire year when they do their tax return, it's just going to be a simple check the box, yes, I've had health insurance for the 12 months. There's not going to be any issues there or additional tax forms to be filing. But for the other individuals that may have gone through the health exchange and maybe didn't have coverage for the entire year, there will be additional forms and calculations of potential and possibly tax penalties that everyone, I'm sure, has heard about or many people have heard about. In addition to that, if they did use the health exchange to get their insurances, they will have to calculate if there's a credit on their personal tax return for certain income levels and so forth, and depending also to the number of household members that are there when they're filing their tax returns. So a couple of forms that they're going to have to be aware of are potentially calculating the tax credit are Form 8962. If they took the health insurance credit in advance. And unfortunately, if they are calculating potential penalty, you're looking at 8965 there. So those are additional forms that are going to that have not necessarily been finalized, and the instructions are not necessarily finalized, but are going to make those tax returns a little bit more confusing. And so for those individuals that do have to file that, they won't be able to file an easy form this year. So the forms are going to be a little more complicated.
And were you saying there's a question about the deadline or they might be delayed or something?
Yeah, I was mentioning that to you a little bit earlier before we got on air here. Not only because of that, there are some other tax laws that people have been accustomed to in the past, especially our teachers that have taken a deduction on the front of their tax return. We're looking the $250 deduction for the expenses that they have in their classroom items, so forth. That technically sunset at the end of the 2013 year. And the tuition deduction that maybe people,
that was a law passed in Albany recently, and then but it was only
IRS.
For a short
we're
term.
Talking IRS now.
It was a federal law.
Yeah, we're talking about IRS here. So relating back to the teachers as an example, and also including the home energy credit, potentially some of those credits have expired, but word is out of Washington that they're going to be reinstated following the elections now. However, with that, there's most likely going to be a delay in the tax filing season. So the IRS hasn't been able to finalize the tax forms yet. So look for a slight delay if you're going to be looking for certain deductions.
So you might not be able to file the first week in January.
No, I would say if you have those, you most definitely are not going to be able to file those. One of the other big things, and that was more or less on the individual end, the other big tax law change when it came to the business end of it really is the elimination of the bonus depreciation and the large Section 179 quick write-off of business assets. We can get into more of that in the business later on, but now it's a huge reduction in writing off equipment or any other machinery and things like that on a quick write-off.
So it makes it more difficult for local businesses?
It potentially could. Potentially could. I mean, the limit was $500,000 prior to this year. Now we're looking at a $25,000 limit. So it's a huge reduction.
So there probably are some local businesses that are affected.
Could be impacted. And hopefully, from a business standpoint, they were planning that throughout the year.
Any other major changes? Or
No other real major changes. I mean, those are the ones that I really picked up on. We can talk. We'll get into some of the other changes as we get through some of the questions here, or if we get into another topic. And of course, you also have your other key facts and figures, basically, whether their mileage rate increases or decreases, whether there's deductions there, or the standard deduction and so forth like that. But those are usually affected and adjusted for inflation and so forth.
And I guess does the price of gas figure into that? I mean,
gas has
all of a sudden gone cheaper. So
it's gone cheaper, but the mileage rate was set earlier in the year, and I don't see any word from Washington where they're going to reduce that mileage rate. It's 56 cents for this current year. When you're talking about business, medical is 23.5 cents. So if traveling back and forth for medical visits and so forth, you do potentially get that deduction when it comes to your itemized deductions. Charity, you can still deduct 14 cents, and there are some moving mileage expenses that you can deduct there.
All right, we get to some of the questions that have come in. What are the most common mistakes you see people make?
Tom, the biggest mistake is for the people, it's still mathematical. I mean, it literally is adding and subtracting.
Carrying the three.
Yeah, it's just those are some of the biggest mistakes that you see. But when we get past that, it's the calculation of earned income credit. That's usually a big mistake that we see on the tax returns. Whether there are children in the household and there's certain income thresholds that are you're under, and you're able to claim a credit on your tax return for that, whether you have one, two, three, or more children in the house, depending upon the earnings. That's a common mistake, is earned income credit calculation there. Basically, some of the other mistakes really might be omissions. And when I say omissions and mistakes, basically people might shortchange themselves. And that could come right down to itemized deductions. Maybe they had the opportunity to itemize in a current year, but forgot to maybe calculate the property taxes that they could have deducted, or additional charitable contributions. Or in some places, if your employer may not reimburse you for all of your expenses that you're entitled to at least potentially reimburse, you can calculate that on your tax return as part of your itemized deductions and potentially get additional tax deductions, and do the best you can for that and reduce your taxes.
I'm wondering, The IRS gets a lot of bad publicity, and people don't seem to like it. From a accountant's point of view, do you have a problem with the IRS,
No.
How difficult is it to work with?
The biggest problem over the years, last several years, I would say, is the reduction of employees and the assistance that you would want to receive. I have many people say, "Can I call the IRS if I need to do this?" And I said, "Sure, and I'll give you the number and so forth." Obviously, it's an 800 number at that point, but the wait times have increased.
They've had staff cuts.
Staff cuts, right. So the wait times have increased. But generally, when you get a person on the line there, I haven't had the experience. I generally go through the tax professional system, I want to say. But that it's the wait times. It really is. And it generally goes for the state as well.
Okay, the next question we have are, what are the most common deductions people overlook?
Okay, well, I did touch on that a little bit, and I'm just going to reiterate a little bit on that, but it could be the mortgage interest on your home. I know everybody kind of looks at that, but the property taxes, local taxes overlooked, medical expenses, really, in tracking the total medical expenses, you might be able to deduct that on your personal tax return. There are limitations for that deduction, and really keeping track of the mileage back and forth there. I've had some returns that I've known that they're teachers and they don't give me any expenses there. So we'll go back and we'll request, did you have any in classroom expenses? So that's a deduction right off the top on the front of the tax return. That's really what you're looking at there. Now, on the state level, some returns that we've received, people have actually forgot to reduce their state income or taxable income by the Social Security benefits. that they've received, and some also too potentially for the retirement. If they're of retirement age, in New York, you're allowed to reduce your income up to $20,000 if you're a non-municipal employee receiving retirement benefits, and actually all of it generally if you're a municipal employee. So I've had some of those returns where we've gladly had to amend tax returns, and then they receive refunds. So that's a good experience.
That sounds much better than other outcomes.
Yes.
Can you explain charitable deductions and what the tax benefit to an individual really amounts to?
Well, the charitable deductions, and that's going to be in what we call the Schedule A itemized deductions, okay? Not everybody is going to be able to take that if you don't itemize, okay? And for individuals that are under 65, $12,400 is your standard deduction. So if you don't have itemized deductions in excess of that, you won't be taking an itemized deduction. But let's assume you do at this point, okay? The charitable deductions, there's cash, checks, so forth like that, and those will be directly entered on Schedule A, it's called, okay? But there might be other contribution opportunities. There might be a stock that you've had for many, many years, and now you're concerned because now if I cash it in, I have potential capital gains. I may pay tax on that. I may not pay tax on that. Well, you have an opportunity for a qualified not-for-profit to give that stock away, an appreciated stock, not pay the capital gains, but yet get the full deduction, and then calculate and then see how much on your tax return you're able to benefit from.
So it's like
from.
Saving double.
Right. Right, exactly. At that point, I mean, you're benefiting two. You're benefiting the organization. You're benefiting yourself by not paying the capital gains tax. So that's a really good opportunity for individuals with appreciated stock that they've had and held more than 1 year to take that advantage of. Basically, other non-cash donations that they can take are clothing, household items that they generally bring to, say, a Goodwill or a Salvation Army and so forth. But everybody has to remember that it's up to the individual donor to justify the cost, the fair market value and the deduction. It's not up to the organization receiving the item or the items to actually give them a number.
Salvation Army doesn't give you an itemized list when you bring
Correct.
Stuff.
They just give you a slip.
They give you a slip that says you gave them something.
Right, right. It's your responsibility to basically catalog that, come up with a reasonable amount that it's fair market value, and then be able to justify that in case of an audit. That it is definitely not up to the organization, and that's a very common mistake that people think about. They think that the organization has to give them a dollar amount. We do a lot of work for not-for-profits, and that is basically one of the biggest pet peeves we have, and we've had many conversations with organizations. What can I put in the letter? Can I say that the value of the donation was $1,000? I said, no, never do that. Just say thank you for your donation of this, and then that's it, and keep it that simple. The individual is responsible.
And then if it turned out you donated $200,000 worth of clothes to Salvation Army, then they might look at
I would
closer.
Say that's a big number. I'd say that's a big number, but
otherwise
exactly. The other item from a charitable contributions people might overlook is when you volunteer your time. The out-of-pocket expenses are deductible, and they're considered cash donations.
So you look at that sheet about the gas mileage?
Out-of-pocket, yeah, you got the gas mileage. You're right there. You keep track of your time there. But if you have any other expenses, let's say you were responsible for contributing some supplies and you just wanted to donate those supplies to a fundraiser, a fund drive, you're entitled to a deduction based upon whatever the cost is. Keep the receipt. Keep track of it. It's considered a cash donation. What people don't understand is your time is not deductible. The time. So many times, I'll give you an example. I have surveyors that have donated their time and said, can I deduct the cost of what the survey would have been? The real only way that you can potentially deduct that is if they picked up the income as well, which you won't do. So a service-oriented organization or a business cannot deduct the actual service, only the out-of-pocket expenses related to it, such as staff or any other printing costs or whatever it may be.
And is that the same for election for candidates? If you worked on a campaign,
non-deductible political campaigns, right? We're looking at 501c3s.
Ah,
yes.
Let's see. What's the next question here? Are there any recent changes to tax law that people might know about but should? I guess we covered most of that.
Yep.
Let's see. Small business. There are many different types of businesses one can incorporate as or from. Can you discuss some of the financial issues? Okay, so if you're starting a business, I guess the question is, Which type of an LLC or a
what should you set up?
Yeah, which should you set up? Yeah.
Well, the proverbial answer to that is going to be it depends. What's the purpose? The most common is going to be a sole proprietor, LLC, corporations, whether that what we would also consider an S corporation and so forth. To say what you should set up would be a mistake right away. You have to look at the entire picture. It may make sense to be a sole proprietor. It may make sense to be an LLC. The differences are on some of these. If you have more than one individual in a business, most likely you'll want to have an entity such as an LLC or a corporation, potentially an S corp or a C corp, depending upon what you want to do. And those levels, those entities formed, such as the LLC, I'll use that as that example, gives you the protection. It's a different insurance. It's another insurance policy where it basically protects the personal assets of the owners at that point. So having an LLC and you have employees, and if there's an issue where there's a lawsuit against the entity, potentially you are more protected from the personal asset standpoint, where the liability would just remain in the entity. Now, from a taxing standpoint, it really depends on your personal situation. Depends on what you're trying to accomplish in a goal. So, I would say at that point you need to look at all avenues. What are the intentions of the business? How many employees are you looking to get into? Are you not looking to have employees? Are you looking for expansion? And potentially down the road, are you looking for succession planning? These are all things that you really need to look at in the aspects before deciding how to set it up. So unfortunately, what happens is most of the new entities we work with, they've already set up the entity, and so we have to kind of work around it and try to maximize what they've already set up. My advice is at that point, try to seek out a professional that's going to give you all the different pitfalls of the different organizations you potentially could set up, and then the whys. You have to know what the whys are and what the goals are. So I know I didn't really give you an answer there, but there is no real answer until you look at your own personal situation.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Tom Fusito, a certified public accountant in Cairo, who's just started his own firm after 20 years working out of Hudson. And you can call in with questions if you have them, 518-622-2598 for the few minutes we have left. I was wondering if the amount of business that you get or the amount of phone calls that you get are any sort of gauge on how well the economy is doing.
Well, actually, recently in the last year and a half, I would say, the last year and a half, I've seen the turn. Obviously, after the 2008 meltdown, the collapse we had there, that was a tough situation, including real estate. And the real estate market has been tough to come back here. Excuse me, but
and I would think a lot of small businesses closed, and maybe you're seeing some signs of now that some people starting.
But
again,
to be honest with you, Tom, not necessarily cut you off there, but the businesses that survived were the strong businesses, and they really understood how to run a business at that point and could weather the downturn in the market, and also too the downturn in the economy. Those were the businesses actually that I'm seeing now that have come back stronger than ever. Those are the ones that basically understood that they weren't in a sprint, they were in a marathon, and they were making decisions not for today, but also for tomorrow and 3 to 5 to 7 years down the road. And that's really the key. And I understand when you put on your website about the planning and so forth, when you talk about business, I understand today you want to talk about maybe taxes for 2014, but in reality, the key factors are where are you going to be in 3 years or 5 years? And what am I going to do today from a decision-making standpoint that's going to impact me down the road? Because those entities that really take the time to look into that and plan will most definitely be able to weather any downturn. And also, too, when there's an uptick in the economy, they'll be able to reap the benefits in a much more efficient manner rather than just basically catching a shooting star.
And so you think that there are some more businesses starting locally?
No doubt.
Yeah, it is picking up.
I can see it. I can see it definitely. And the calls that we're getting are those type of questions. The questions basically that you asked me, what type of entity should we be forming? What are the effects? I'm a sole proprietor. Should I incorporate? I'm starting to grow. And a lot of the emails I've been getting too, I need to hire one or two more employees. What are the effects of payroll?
That's good news, yeah.
Right. So even if it's one or two more, now you've affected one or two more families. So now you have the growth, that's an exciting. Those are exciting telephone calls for me.
There was a lot, I guess, questions that the Health Care Act was going to impact businesses and they weren't going to hire. Have you found that? Has it been a onerous burden on local small businesses?
Well, basically, I think the adjustments have been made with that already. I really do. I mean, yes, there were some factors in that with the increase of insurances. Insurance rates really have gone through the roof in the last couple to a few years. But basically what the owners that are really preparing for that basically have either directed their employees to the health exchange or decided to come up with a certain percentage. And a fixed percentage and say, this is what we can cover, these are the benefits. And then also to potentially, and even on a better end, some of those employers, especially the better ones, have also started to offer more cafeteria plans and additional cafeteria plans. And those plans, if someone doesn't understand what those are, they afford the employee to have health benefits and other benefits, but we'll stick to health benefits at pre-tax dollars. Meaning they're not paying not only income taxes, federal and state or local, they're also not paying Social Security taxes, which is another 7.65% savings. So it's their tax rates plus Social Security, and in some instances could be up to potentially a 35-40% benefit to the employee by just having the employer offer those plans, but yet the employer maybe necessarily is not footing the additional bill. They're letting the government help pay for some of those plans. So those are very key things that I've seen in the last couple of years where employers are getting a little bit more sophisticated and starting to utilize the tax laws and the benefits that are really out there and available.
I was wondering if people around here are getting sophisticated or using I wonder if there's like apps and things that are helpful for folks that track mileage or do you get interaction? Do you recommend anything like that?
I would definitely recommend apps. I mean, I'm sure there are many out there myself. I mean, you could do the old logbook. You can still write those down. You can go back to, you know, computer. But I mean, obviously, any apps on the phone, I don't have any particular that I could share with you at this point. But going back to the business standpoint, and even individuals, the biggest mistake I want to say that people have is they really actually do shortchange themselves in deductions that are truly allowable. And basically that I highly suggest that they keep better track of what they're entitled to deduct. And by doing that, when they file their tax return, they'll be able to have a better outcome.
Because you're a lot of times faced with they come at the end of the year and you say, well, you could have deducted this, or were you tracking this, or were you tracking that?
Right, and that's the key, basically. And we have clients, but most of our clientele, we interact throughout the year, and we're already actually prepping and planning for 2015. We're setting our sights on 2015, 2016 already, because organizations or entities, especially businesses, will go into that, whether they're deciding to make purchases or not. Do we look at 14 making the purchase, 15, potentially 16? I can't stress enough the planning really does begin before the year commences.
Is that a lot of the time you spend with clients is talking about the planning and long-term goals?
Yeah, most of the time we spend with clients really, truly is from a planning standpoint. I've yet to find someone that actually can change the past. So basically we use the past as historic. We use historic numbers, and that's what accountants generally do in historic numbers. But we use the historic numbers to help clients really see the trends, the analysis, and then use those trends and analysis to help them make decisions for tomorrow.
I guess they're a learning process, those numbers.
Absolutely.
Yes. I guess we've gone through our questions now. Are there other topics that you wanted to mention that you
Well, I just wanted to give a couple of things here from a deduction standpoint. I just want to make sure that people, when they're filing their tax returns, let's just look at a basic individual tax return if they're coming near the end of the year, just to give them a couple of little pointers that they can do. Maybe they want to accelerate their deductions this year because maybe they won't be making as much money next year. Okay, let's just take that scenario. They have the opportunity potentially to pay that 13th mortgage payment. Get the interest deduction this year. Let's talk about that. They have potentially they can call their tax collector or their assessor and say, how much of my real estate tax is going to be in January for town and county and local taxes? And I'd like to pay that in December. And then next year, maybe they're not going to itemize. So maybe they can accelerate the deductions now. And then next year, when they're not going to be making as much, if that's the plan, or vice versa. You can also delay deductions into next year. And the one of the easiest, if individuals are paying estimates at this point, pay the January estimate in December if you want the deduction this year for the state. State taxes are deductible if they're not subject to alternative minimum tax, and we'll get into that. It's a very complicated area. But they can accelerate some of those deductions this year. And again, contributions. So think about at least a two-year plan. Think about 2014 and 2015 if you can get the crystal ball out and try to figure out where your income is going to be next year. You may want to accelerate deductions into 2014, or vice versa. You may want to delay them because you think you're going to make that much more next year. And so it's really a two-year plan. This is not a one-year tax return plan.
Because you can always switch. There's always a little bit of switching.
You have a little bit of flexibility in that. Right. You have some flexibility in that. So it's really when people come in to give us the tax return information, prepare the tax return or have us do that, it's too late at that point. At that point, we'll prepare the tax return and then start to question you about the next year already, because we can help you prospectively. So that's really the key, is to take the next 45 days and really, or 40 days, and just really sit there and say, where am I going to be? And do I have the ability to potentially project where I'm going to be in 2015? And if I can, what do I want to do for the things that I can control? Some of the things people won't be able to control, others will.
All right, we're running out of time here, but we want to give out your information. It's Tom Facito. The website is TomFacitoCPA.com.
That's right.
F-U-C-I-T-O. You want to give out the phone number, too? Or?
It's 518-622-2844. Again, 450 Main Street.
Right there on Main Street in Cairo. And we'll answer any of your questions about you deal with businesses, individuals.
We do small businesses, individuals, many not-for-profits. We have quite a group of clientele, a not-for-profit area, and a lot of business consulting. We do a lot of consulting, a lot of prospective thinking there too, and quite a few audits as well.
And Wave Farm is one of those nonprofits
that
works. So thank you so much, Tom Facito, for coming out to Wave Farm today and answering some of our questions about tax season as we get toward the end of the year.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.